Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und ich habe die unglaublich große Ehre und ich kann selber noch nicht glauben, dass ich das tatsächlich sage, heute ein Interview mit Dr. Deepak Chopra mit dir zu teilen. Und wahrscheinlich kennst du Dr. Deepak Chopra. Also es ist unwahrscheinlich, dass du ihn eigentlich nicht kennst. Deepak Chopra ist sozusagen der Mensch weltweit, der, glaube ich, mit die meisten Bücher zum Thema Spiritualität, Selbstheilung, Meditation, Achtsamkeit, persönliche Weiterentwicklung in Kombination mit den zuvor genannten Themen geschrieben hat. Dieser Mensch ist unglaublich und wie ich während meines Interviews gemerkt habe, auch, glaube ich, mit Abstand einer der intelligentesten Menschen, mit denen ich jemals gesprochen habe. Und dieses Interview ist unglaublich toll. Ich konnte wahnsinnig viel für mich mitnehmen und Deepak Chopra hat einfach eine ganz tolle Art, eine wunderschöne Energie und ein unfassbares Wissen. Und ich bin super dankbar, dass er es mit mir und mit euch teilt. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude mit dem Interview. Das Interview ist auf Englisch. Du kannst es dir auf YouTube mit deutschen Untertiteln anhören oder bei mir auf der Webseite kannst du dir die Transkription durchlesen. Da findest du auf jeden Fall alles zu dem Interview auch auf Deutsch. Und ich würde dir empfehlen, für das Interview dir einen Zettel und einen Stift daneben zu legen, weil es sind wirklich viele Informationen dabei. Und ich würde dir eh immer empfehlen, einfach Notizen zu machen, weil man die Sachen einfach wieder vergisst, wenn man sie nicht aufschreibt. Und Deepak Chopra ist am 23.04. in Hamburg. Jetzt in Kürze ist er da und hält einen Vortrag abends über das Buch auch The Healing Self und über all das, worüber wir jetzt auch gerade hier in dem Podcast gesprochen haben. Und ich würde mich freuen, wenn du da bist. Ich werde auf jeden Fall da sein. Und ich glaube, es wird einfach ein super schöner Abend. Und genau, ich würde jetzt einfach sagen, wir legen jetzt los. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude mit diesem Interview mit Dr. Deepak Chopra. I am so excited and happy and grateful to have Dr. Deepak Chopra in the podcast today. And I just say, hello, Deepak. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. It's very nice to talk to you.
Thank you. So I'm in Berlin right now. You are in California. It's 10 a.m. in the morning. How was your morning? How does your morning routine look like in the life of Deepak Chopra?
Well, this morning I woke up around 5 a.m. I meditated till 7 a.m. And then from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. I was doing yoga. And then after that, I was just relaxing, waiting for your call. And then the rest of the day today, I happened to be free. So I'm going to maybe go out for lunch with a friend, and the rest of the day is pretty easy for me today.
Oh, that sounds good.
But the morning routine is like that every day.
So when you meditate for 2 hours, which I think is amazing. So when you meditate, would you let us into your head or into your mind, into your consciousness for a moment? What happens when you meditate? How does your meditation look like?
Well, it varies, but I do a lot of self-reflection in the beginning, which could include existential questions like, who am I? What do I want? What's my purpose? What am I grateful for? What is the nature of reality? What is the meaning of death? On and on. So, you know, I do what is called reflective inquiry, always starting with the question, who am I or what am I? And who wants to know the answer to the question, what am I? Then I do a lot of vipassana, which these days is called mindful awareness. So I start with breath, then I do awareness of the five sensory experiences, sound, touch, sight, taste, and smell. Then practice awareness of my body and then of sensations in my body and also do something called interoception, which is getting to know what's happening inside my body through awareness. Then I practice awareness of mental space, which is emotions and thoughts. And then I do awareness of the web of relationship. And then I go back to being aware of just being aware. And then I use a mantra technique to transcend beyond subject-object split. That's what I do in the morning, but then in the evening before I sleep, I do something called Yoga Nidra, which is how to cultivate awareness in deep sleep and dream state, all to one end, which is what is the nature of reality.
Okay, wow, that's amazing. I would like to go back to the beginning of your meditation where you said that you ask mm-hmm. yourself questions of self-reflection, normal questions everyone asks themselves in the morning, of course, like, who am I? So do these questions change, like, or do the answers change? Is there every morning another answer, or is it more a feeling that comes to you, or is there an expectation of an answer?
There shouldn't be any expectation of the answer because it already introduces bias. The answers are always in the form of either a sensation or an image, or a feeling, or a thought. Mm. So that comes on its own. And it does shift, although at this stage in my life, you know, I know for sure I'm not a body or a mind or an experience. So it helps me just settle into an awareness which is beyond all provisional identities. All the identity we have is provisional except for the awareness in which those identities are processed.
Mm. So would you say that it can be even described by words, the answer that comes to you when you ask the question, who am I?
It's an experience of just unbounded, timeless, formless being, which is very difficult to describe. You're right.
Yeah.
In words, it's very difficult to describe, but we have to communicate, so we use words.
Would you say that it is...
Rumi, you know the Rumi poet, Rumi, he said God's language is silence. God's language is silence. Everything else is poor translation.
That's beautiful. I like that. I love Rumi, and it's a beautiful, that's a beautiful quote. But would you say that when you are in the state, or when you get the answer of who am I, would you say that this is experiencing God to you?
Yes, it is. But here's the problem with the word God. As soon as you use the word, because we have used that word for thousands of years, and because that word means different things in different cultures and religions, anything that can be defined or can be experienced as an image or a thought cannot be God, because by definition, that's not infinite. You know, infinite being or infinite awareness cannot be subject to a mental construct, whether it's an image or an idea or a concept, because all concepts are in the realm of the finite. And if God is infinite being, which I understand is my definition of God, even as I say definition, I realize that to define something is to limit it.
Yeah.
But as soon as you define it, you limit it. But yes, God is our highest instinct to know ourselves as fundamental reality, not as a human being, but as an awareness in which the human being is the arising and subsiding of modifications of awareness itself. You know, what we call the physical world, what we call the physical body, what we call the mind or the intellect or the ego, they're all modifications of consciousness, nothing else. You know, these are human constructs. In the deeper reality, there's no universe, there's no body, there's no mind, there's only consciousness modifying itself into experience. So that experience is not just a human experience, which is one mode of experience, but, you know, every living species has its own modality or mode of knowing an experience. What does the world feel like to a bat? What does it feel like to be a bat? You can't answer that question. What does it feel like to be a worm? What does it feel like to be an insect with multiple eyes, or a snake, or a dolphin? These are all sentient beings having a particular mode of knowing and experience. Even an amoeba has a mode of knowing and experience. What we call reality is a human mode of knowing and experience. But because we have language, which is both a gift and a curse, what we do is describe these modes of experience and knowing, give them names, and then create the notion of an objective reality of objects, of a body, or even a mind. Because the mind is nothing but a fluctuation of consciousness as a thought, or as a feeling, or as an image. The body is a fluctuation of consciousness as a sensation or a sense of perception. So is the universe. So what we call mind, body, universe, all these words we use are human constructs for a species-specific mode of knowing and experience. And we call that a human mode, which is a name we gave to ourselves. In fact, we gave names to every other living species. A giraffe doesn't know it's a giraffe, or it's called a giraffe by humans. If you have a dog, it doesn't know your income or your title or the fact that you're a journalist doing a podcast. Those are human constructs. But if you go really deeper, then the entire universe that we describe as humans is a human construct, artificially created through what we call subject-object split. There's me. And then there's everything else. There's me and there's the universe. But what we call me is also an activity of the totality, which is inseparable. So it's very complex, but, you know, meditation allows you to go to an experience where you even realize that even birth and death are human constructs. Based on the idea that you're a body-mind, then you create the idea that there's birth and death. Yeah. But the awareness in which this is happening, that which you call I, you know, you say, I am Laura. I had Chinese food yesterday. I live in Berlin. I'm doing a podcast. I was once a baby. I was once a teenager. I am in love. I am upset at Trump. Whatever the experience, the only constant is I, or that which we call I. Other animals probably don't use the word, but what we call I is a timeless awareness in which these experiences arise and subside, to which we give names and concepts. So I, or awareness, is the only invariant. It's the only constant in every experience which is changing. The experience could be a mental experience or a physical experience, perceptual, but no experience lasts. So I would like to quote to you a German philosopher by the name of Wittgenstein that you probably know. And he said, we are asleep, our life is a dream, but once in a while we wake up enough to know that we are dreaming. So what did Wittgenstein mean when he said we wake up enough to know that we are dreaming? What do we wake up to? We wake up to the awareness in which what we call everyday reality is a lucid dream. If I asked you what happened to your childhood, you'd say it's gone. If I asked you what happened to yesterday, you would say it's gone. If I asked you what happened to this morning, it's gone. If I asked you what happened to 1 second ago, it's over. So actually, the whole thing, what we call everyday reality, is a lucid dream in a vivid now. And now is not a moment in time. Now is the presence of awareness in which this dream is unfolding that we call everyday reality. So the past is a dream, the future is a dream, and now is ungraspable because as soon as you grasp it, it's over. And, you know, every experience is over at the moment it arises, including the experience of your body. There's no continuity to your body. There's no continuity to your mind. There's no continuity to any perceptual experience. The only continuity is awareness in which all these experiences are arising and subsiding. The awareness itself is not a form. It doesn't have a color. It doesn't have a shape. It doesn't have an age. It doesn't have a race or ethnic background. It doesn't have a nationality. All those are human constructs. So to be free of all these human constructs is actually to participate consciously in creating the dream that you call everyday reality. I hope this is not too complex.
Well, I think it's super interesting, but I think I really have to listen to that again from the recording.
Yeah.
But I think I really got what you want to say. And what I was trying to figure out was how can we apply that to our everyday life, actually? How can we, all the things you just said, how can we adjust that to life, really, like from a day-to-day life?
If life is a dream, and if life is a dream, you can upgrade the quality of the dream.
Ah, that's
most
good.
Most people downgrade the illusion. And when you downgrade the illusion, then you have violence, you have war, you have terrorism, you have ethnocentrism, you have racism, you have bigotry, you have hatred, you have violence. But when you understand that you are the awareness in which there are almost infinite choices, then I would say you can practically create a joyful, energetic body, or the experience of a joyful, energetic body, loving, compassionate heart, an alert and reflective mind, and lightness of being, or what people call the experience of flow. So there's no resistance. It's a spontaneous flow. I would say also spontaneous creativity, intuition, insight, imagination, introspection, power of intention, synchronicity, meaningful coincidences. All these kind of experiences unfold very spontaneously.
Okay, that's beautiful what you just said. I will try to make that really clear for everyone who's listening. So you can adjust.
Will you be translating this at all?
No. It will be in English. But I will transcript it, so there will be a written German version, but it will be published in English.
Okay.
Yeah. But okay. I will just try to for everyone who's listening right now to make it maybe a little bit more.
Yeah, you know,
clearer.
When I give the talk in Germany, in Hamburg, I'll make it simple in the beginning, but in the end, I think we have to touch on what is reality.
Yes, definitely. But what you just said is that you can actually upgrade the dream you are dreaming, right? So you always have the choice.
Yeah, I mean, you know, most people are having a nightmare. It's not a dream at all.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think that is so fundamental what you just said. It's to become aware in the first step that I am actually dreaming, and what kind of dream am I dreaming, to get aware of that, and then to become aware I can change the dream I'm dreaming by changing my awareness, my focus, my intention, and that I can actually become the creator of my own dream. Is that correct?
Right. That's very good. But also remember that when we say I, it's not the body-mind, because body-mind is also part of the dream. That the I is the awareness in which body-mind and what we call universe go together.
Yeah.
As a unified experience, as a unified experience.
Okay. So you recently published a book which is called The Healing Self. And that book is mainly about how we, the way I understood it, how we also can take more responsibility for our own health, and to see that also, I mean, there's the connection that we are the dreamer of our own dream, and we also create our own health, right, in parts.
Yeah, so let's now, if you move away from metaphysical or spiritual language, just to the regular scientific language, then that, which we call our body, is in activity in our awareness. And, we have created constructs out of those experiences, like there's a brain, there's gene, there's microbiome, there's epigenetics. And these are very useful constructs because, when you create a construct and you objectify it as matter, then it lends itself to data and measurement and even technology. So the healing self talks about, the role of the interaction between genes, epigenetics, microbiome, brain, mind, endocrine system, immune system, which are all basically interactions in awareness of what we call wholeness. So the word health comes from the word whole, which, by the way, is also the root word for holy. So whole, wholeness, holy, health, healing. They're all a return of the memory to who we are. And who we are is a unbroken wholeness in which self-interactions are resulting in what we call homeostasis or self-regulation, which is another word for healing. We also know now from, modern epigenetics and genetics that only 5% of disease-related gene mutations are fully penetrant, which means they guarantee the disease. So only 5% of those genetic errors that can cause chronic illness, it doesn't matter what the illness is, cancer, autoimmune illness, various inflammatory disorders, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's. When you look deeply at these situations, there are indeed genetic mutations, but those genetic mutations do not guarantee the disease. They're influenced by the quality of our life. So sleep, for example, is a very important factor in self-regulation, both dream sleep and deep sleep. But so is the ability to quieten your mind and go to a place where self-regulation spontaneously kicks in. This is the role of mindfulness or meditation. And then there are very specific kinds of movement or postures in, say, yoga or breathing that affect your autonomic nerves that are responsible for self-regulation. Most people haven't paid attention to the fact that your nerves that go to your viscera, like the vagus nerve that goes to your heart or intestines or colon or kidney or liver or microbiome, these nerves are responsible for self-regulation, but they're usually their activity is overshadowed by what we call sympathetic overdrive, which is when people are stressed, they overdrive the sympathetic nervous system with adrenaline and cortisol and inflammation. So when you look seriously at disease, you'll see that almost every disease, there's a background of low-grade inflammation. As the word inflammation suggests, to be on fire. So, you know, the world is on fire, everything from climate change to war, terrorism, our behavior, our mind, our bodies are inflamed. Yeah. If you can cut down this inflammation, you influence 95% of all chronic illness. Then there's more, you know, there's the quality of food you eat, the quality of your relationships, your social interactions, your interaction with what we call nature or the environment. It's actually very beautiful when you see that these are all built into our biological systems, but we got so caught up with the what we call the reductionist approach, which is a very mechanistic approach. You look at the body and divide it into parts. But in the deeper reality, there are no parts. What we call the parts are activities of the whole.
Yes, yes, that's true. That's amazing. And when I'm listening to you and I'm hearing you, I just think how does all this information come to you? I mean, where do you get your informations from? What inspires you? Like you as a human spiritual being, bringing so much inspiration and knowledge to the world, where do you get your inspiration from?
Well, you know, in my younger days, I was very much curious about biology. I trained as an internist, as a neuroendocrinologist. I understand the brain and the immune system and everything else, because that was my training. But I also read with great persistence over the years all the Eastern and Western philosophers, particularly, you know, some of the German philosophers like Schopenhauer and Wittgenstein and many others. And but also very much was tuned into Eastern wisdom traditions and the tradition of yoga. But these days, I just don't do anything. I just allow it to spontaneously come.
That's amazing. But is there anything like your, do you have a vision for the next 10 years or something where you say this is my mission here on this planet, this is what I want to bring forth?
Well, yeah, in a sense, yes, because we all have to do something, you know. So my vision is to reach as many people as possible, maybe a billion or more, which these days is possible through social networks and through all the ability we have to reach globally. So if I could reach a billion people for personal and social transformation, that could move us in the direction of a more peaceful, just, sustainable, healthier, joyful, happier world. I would love that, but I'm not attached to it. So, that's what I would say is a personal vision at the moment. I'm also writing a book called Meta Human, which would be about what is the next stage of human evolution.
Hmm. So what would you say? What is the next stage?
It is a transformation from a relative personal identity to a universal identity, while keeping the personal identity there for practical things like driving a car or speaking to Laura.
Mm. Okay, yeah, that's beautiful. I'm excited to read your next book. And this is a question I really would love to ask you. I mean, you wrote 86 books so far. How do you perceive time? I mean, you must have somehow a different perception of time, I think, because I'm writing now my second book and I really don't know how to get it into my day. So I was thinking, okay, how can someone possibly write 86 books? I think that's amazing. So how do you perceive time? Do you have a different perception of time and space somehow? Or how do you make that possible?
That in which experience occurs is not in time. There is no time in awareness by itself. As soon as you create a subject-object split, me and the other, then the measurement of experience becomes what we call time. It's the measurement of experience. So if you are totally present in whatever activity you're doing, like right now, speaking to you, or writing a book, or whatever, then time does not constrain you. You still have to make an appointment, you know, you still have to make the flight, but you're not thinking about it. So you know, you have that somewhere in the outskirts of your awareness, and you know, there's always your email to remind you, or your schedule, or your calendar. So I don't actually think of what I have to do this afternoon, or this evening, or tomorrow, or you know, after we hang up, I am aware that I have one or two more things to do, but then I have a day off. That's what I have aware. But if I had multiple things to do, I would be vaguely aware of them, but not thinking about them. So, you know, I write every day, but I write not with the intention of adding material to the book. I write what I'm experiencing and what I'm thinking about. And then later, it starts to kind of formulate itself into a topic or a theme or a collection of ideas that become a book. I'm very aware, right? You know, when I speak, I'm observing, and this is a habit. It's not something I try to do. But I'm aware of what I'm saying. Like, you know, everything I've said this to you, there are a lot of sentences there that I never used before, and they could become seed ideas for something later. So the book comes by itself, ultimately.
Thank you so much for sharing. That's very inspiring. Sure. So I have one last question I ask everyone who's the guest in my podcast. And the question, there's one question before that question. So how old do you want to become in your life?
In this life. Say that again.
How old do you want to become in this life?
You mean chronologically in terms of human years?
Yes, in age. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Because it's all provisional, right? If you were in Jupiter, I would be 3 years old right now.
No, really, in human years, yeah.
So in human years, actually, you know, I've written a lot about this in my previous books. But right now, I don't even think about it. I only identify with the timeless.
Okay. So let's imagine you have a beautiful, I mean, you do have a beautiful life. You have all the successes you wish to have. You reached over a billion people. But there comes the day when you will leave this life, this human life here right now on Earth. And I come to you on your last day of your life. And I have to tell you that actually all of your books have been deleted. There is no homepage anymore. There has been a technical mistake. So there's no information left. But I have a white paper for you and a pen, and I ask you that you can write down the three most important wisdoms you would like people to remember from you here on this planet, what would you write on this paper?
I would write three words, maybe: love, compassion, and self-awareness.
Thank you so much. Deepak Chopra, I am really grateful from my heart for this conversation with you. Thank you so much. And for everyone who wants to meet you in person here in Germany, you will be in Hamburg. I will do the link in the show notes. And you just published your new book, The Healing Self, and You Are the Universe. Is there anything else you would like to share right now, how people can connect with you in the best way? I know that you always do meditation programs where people can sign up. Is there anything else that you would like to share here right now?
No, other than the fact that I'm really looking forward to being in Hamburg. I haven't been there in many years, but I remember it well. Actually, I love Berlin too. And so I'm
looking
forward
to my
visit. Someday I will. I love parts of Berlin. Just gorgeous, you know, including what used to be the east part, and also it's very kind of there are parts that are very boutique like. I love it.
Yeah.
But in any case, I think I also do Facebook regularly and I answer people's questions, so anyone can find me. I'm in fact too exposed, so
all. Okay. Deepak, I wish you a beautiful day, a lot of inspiration when you're writing today. And I look forward to meet you in person when we see each other in Hamburg.
Now that you have my phone number, text me when you come. So
I will. Thank you so much.
Great.
Take care.
Thank you.
All the best to you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, all the best.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir dieses Interview gefallen hat, dass du genauso viel wie ich daraus für dich mitnehmen konntest. Ich würde mich unendlich freuen, wenn du bei Instagram vorbeischaust und mir unter dem Post von heute zu diesem Podcast schreibst, was du für dich mitgenommen hast, wie dieses Interview für dich gewesen ist, was du gelernt hast, was dich am meisten inspiriert hat, was du gelernt hast. Und ja, teile das auf jeden Fall unfassbar gerne mit mir, mit der Community. Das wäre wundervoll. Und es gibt ab jetzt, ab sofort, gibt es die Higher Self Inspirations, die du dir kostenlos auf meiner Webseite runterladen kannst. Super geil, wo du meine Manifestationsformel bekommst, meine Morgen- und Abendmeditation, meine Spotify-Playlist und ganz viele andere tolle Sachen. Da kannst du dich einfach kostenlos anmelden und dir runterladen. Ich freue mich, wenn ich dir damit eine kleine Freude mache und dir das gefällt. Und ansonsten sehen wir uns natürlich super gerne auch im Spiritual Sunday, immer sonntags. Und das war es jetzt erstmal von meiner Seite. Vielleicht sehen wir uns in Hamburg bei Deepak Chopra und ansonsten sehen wir uns bestimmt irgendwo anders oder wir hören uns. Wie immer freue ich mich, wenn du mir eine 5-Sterne-Rezension hier auf iTunes schreibst, wenn du Lust hast. Oder wenn du mein Buch gelesen hast, wenn du mir eine 5-Sterne-Rezension bei Amazon schreiben würdest. Das macht mich auch glücklich. Danke dafür. Und ansonsten schicke ich dir jetzt eine riesengroße Herzensumarmung. Ganz viel Licht, ganz viel Liebe. Ich hoffe, es geht dir gut. Ich hoffe, dass ich dich mit diesem Interview inspirieren konnte und hoffe einfach, es geht dir gut, dass du dein Licht in die Welt bringst, dass du gehört hast, du bist der Träumer deines eigenen Traums und du kannst deinem Traum auf jeden Fall ein richtig dickes Upgrade geben, wenn du das möchtest. Das ist alles bei dir, es ist deine Awareness, deine Wahrnehmung von den Dingen, wie sie sind. Und ich höre jetzt auf zu quatschen, lass dich einfach mit diesem Interview in deinen Tag und freue mich, wenn du bei Instagram vorbeischaust und wir gemeinsam über das Interview sprechen. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Du bist ein Geschenk für diese Welt. Danke fürs Zuhören. Rock on und Namaste. Deine Laura.